Well, now, what does he need? Most important. Cover. But the well is really a very public place, so that's not... But the people here don't know him. He fled very far. So he's kind of covered, even though it's not in a literal sense. But what is he looking for at the well? Something to do, not just something to do, but how about a livelihood?
Yeah.
He needs to eat. He needs to work. He needs to gain some income. So that will happen at the well. He knows how to be a shepherd because it's in his Jewish DNA. And it's what the forefathers did, and it's something that was obviously Jewishly inclined, in that you don't have to live in the middle of the city and you can go out on your own, practice as you'd like, and so on and so forth. So Moshe went to look for a livelihood. Meantime, he also found a wife. But he was going for a livelihood. So that's a little bit different. What happened here? Was Yaakov's intention to go find a wife at the well? No. Yaakov was running from Esau, but he was pretty safe now here at this point. But why is he going to the well? He really isn't going directly to a well, per se. He probably had water with him. He wasn't concerned, but he's getting closer to the city, to Haran. And from afar, he sees gathering of people. So he goes there because what didn't he have? Where did his mother tell him to go? To his brother's home, her brother's home. And there are girls, two of them. And that's the family we would like you to marry into. There was no Eliezer who was going to go and promote the Shidduch. He had to do it on his own. So why is he going here? What's he looking for at the well? One word. An address. And that's exactly what he does. He asks them, do you know Lavan? And so on. So I remember in a class, maybe 2 years ago, we actually took this topic from that angle. We're not going to go with that particular angle today. However, we're going to explore this meeting at the well. What does it symbolize? What I do remember from the class that we studied together a couple of years ago, we actually learned inside from the sources stating that this is all symbolic. Because this entire episode at the well, let's just mention it for a moment. He comes and there are these three groups of shepherds. And is three significant? Probably yes, we'll find Midrashim about it. And then he asks them, do you know Lavan? And they said, yes. And then what?
He goes there.
Before that, there was interaction. Where are you from? What? Even before then, there's an interaction there. Do you know Lavan? Yes. Is he okay? Yes. Do you know if his family is okay? Yes. What kind of hospitality is that? Hello, welcome. Have you sojourned from far away? We're inviting you. Do you have where to stay tonight? It's like so, it's really abrupt, and it's not in the spirit of the Abrahamic family at all. So Yaakov is a little displeased with this because these are the people of Haran. I wonder what those girls are like. Are they the same?
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
You would ask that. You know, they're so abrupt and they're so to the point and there's and on top of that there's something else. First of all, this whole beyond the initial encounter, he says, like, why are you sitting here by the well? He's giving them mussar. Like, they could have said, what's it your business, sir? You know, with all due respect, we don't know you. You don't know us. And then he goes on and tells them, it's not the time now to gather the sheep. It's still midday. You shouldn't be gathering here. Everybody should come, feed their sheep, you know, allow your sheep to drink the water and go back to work. Because Yaakov is Ish Emes. His attribute, his trait is one of truthfulness. And here they are, and so it bothered him. It, like, you know, in Yiddish you say echoed. You know, like, I can't take this, it's not right. Where are the morals of the people? Where are the values? Where's the responsibility towards word? And they explain to him, well, you know how it is. There's this well, and there's this big stone, and we have to wait till everybody comes. You know, there were three groups, there were three shepherds there, and they could have been with their helpers as well. You know, Yaakov eventually picks up the stone all by himself. Now they could be four, if that was for minimum, and they could have taken off the stone. Why didn't they say, well, why don't you help us? We'll help you. We'll take it off. It bothered Yaakov. What bothered him? It bothered him that they weren't being honest in their work because they're being paid hourly wage or daily wage and they're sitting here basking in the sun. But on top of that, the very fact that there was a stone on the well bothered him. Why? Why do people put stones on the well? In all my 35 years in Eretz Yisrael, and I hope to go back there as soon as possible, I've encountered shepherds, Bedouins, who live in the desert area, and they have their property. Now, they don't have stones on their wells, but they do have iron grates, and there are locks on those iron grates on top of the well. This is what occurs here. But that bothers him. Why? Why does it bother him? Hospitality, but more than that. Look, you're three men. Why can't you take off the stone? It's not that heavy. They're waiting for everyone to come. Because when everyone comes and they take off the stone, then each one will be able to address their needs for their flock, and everybody could watch how much water he's using. Remember, water is scarce. So it wasn't so much about the difficulty, the physical difficulty, it was about the orientation. We don't trust you, because they didn't even share any information, and just about love, and they know him, but they weren't nice to him, they weren't going to share anything about their own lives or anything about this place or what have you, but we don't even share with each other because we are very suspect of each other. Not that they're saying that, but that's what's behind. We have to wait till everybody comes. That's a lot of time wasted. Wait, three men, two men, 10 men, everybody has to come? Yeah, because we have to make sure that no one will take one drop extra. We don't trust each other. Yes, it's reminiscent of stone, and this is definitely something that bothered Yaakov. Once again, because he's Ish Emes, he's a man of truth, and it bothered him that one of the local women here is going to become his wife. And is this the culture? So he was agitated about that. So, but we're not going further in that. Let's look at our sources. And here we also encounter symbolism. Because I just mentioned a number of things regarding that encounter by the well, but everything about that encounter by the well is all symbolic. We're going to touch upon a few. So, Mishlei 1, who would like to read? Don't all raise your hands at once now. Come on, ladies. Let's hear your voices. Go ahead. Thank you. In English.
And then Abraham's very...
No. Where are you? One. Maybe on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Drink water.
Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Your springs will gush forth in streams of public squares. They will be yours alone, others having no part with you. Let your fountain be blessed. Find joy in the wife of your youth.
So interestingly enough, this is Mishlei. Not easy. However, interestingly enough, they'll be yours alone, other have no parts. This sounds like the people of Haran, but it's only symbolic. Our sages are telling us that what Shlomo HaMelech is speaking about is he is giving a mashal, a parable, and an explanation, the nimshal, the analogy that's used here, stating that what is a well? A well is a wife. A wife. A wife. Just as he said all the positive elements in the well, and then he says, find joy in the wife of your youth. She's the source of life for you, for others, for the family.
Mashiach.
yeah, a tool of a sorts, but it's much more than just a tool. It's really a source that has the energy that could spread her positive energy to her surroundings. So Mishle is speaking about a wife within the context of a well, using that analogy. Let's see what Kliyakar says. I don't have the English for this, and he says as follows. He saw there three groups of three shepherds, and these three that were there, they are Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Moshe, because a woman is a parable, the well is a parable for a woman. So what we explained before, this was the lead-in for that. Shenemar, and it brings us, V'nuchal lomar, and we can also say, another insight in the three groups of shepherds, this is a hint to the three partners in man. Who are the three partners in man? Mother, the father, and Hashem. And that's why he encountered three flocks there to remind him that these are the three elements that from that you can draw energy in order to give water to the sheep. In this case, the sheep are the children. So we're speaking here about the focal point of the woman as a well, and since it is the woman that births the children and feeds the children and nurtures the household, so Kliyakar is telling us that it reminded him about the three different partners and focus on the woman as a very important component in bringing about the next generation. This is very important for Yaakov to think about, because he wasn't just looking for a shidduch at this point. Yaakov is going to birth what? Who? The nation of Israel. So this is the foundation. This is the orientation that a Jew should have when he goes out, searches for a partner, and he has to see his partner as one who can be a nurturer, remembering the other two partners, but focus on that. In Shir HaShirim, this is source 3. Who would like to read?
Anyone, just read.
Thank you.
And when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Laban, and the
flock... Oh, sorry, just a moment. That's 4. Can you read 3, please?
No, I'm sorry.
No problem.
The garden lock is my home, my bride. That lock sealed up spring.
So this is speaking about a source of water as well. In this case, we're speaking about a spring. What is it about the spring? What is it about the source of water? It's sealed. It's closed. That's in stark contrast to what we just read in Mishle, which describes this water, this flowing, this fountain, this continuous flow of water, of energy, as we said before. But then there's also a closed well, a sealed well, one that is not forthcoming with its water so easily. Why not? And why is this applicable here? So I'd like to propose that the way we're going to understand this particular angle of the encounter at the well is that Rachel's well, so to speak, as opposed to the other wells that we mentioned before, is of a different nature. It's a little different. Why? What was the pasuk? It's sealed. What's with this well? It's covered with a stone. So this is symbolic of what was coming. So Yaakov now embarks on his journey, and he's getting messages. Hashem had appeared to Yaakov numerous times, but here he's appearing to him within the context of a well, an analogy. He's going to tell him something about his life. It wasn't going to be an easy life. His well was going to be locked and sealed, covered in a heavy stone. So let's continue. Bakasha, read 4. Anyone? Benny? If nobody else does. Ladies, don't be shy. And when
Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of his uncle Laban, and the flock of his uncle Laban, up and rolled the stone off the mountain of the well and watered the flock of his uncle.
Why does he care so much about the flock of his uncle Lavan? Because if he didn't water it, that flock, who would have to? Rachel, that's what they told him. Hinehi ba'i matzon, she's coming with the flock. Lavan didn't have any sons, and his daughter was his shepherdess. Is that a real world? I guess so. There's an interesting note in one of the commentary about Leah, that Leah was already of marriageable age. Rachel was a bit younger, so that they wouldn't send Leah out, because it wouldn't be tzanua for her. He would, you know, in those days, especially in that area, let Rachel go out with the tzon, with the flock. Comment on this pasuk. Easy, straightforward pasuk. What's the information? He saw her? And what's important for us to know? And he's helping her. The daughter of his uncle Lavan, which we all know, and the flock of his uncle Lavan. He rolled off the stone and watered the flock of his uncle Lavan. What's this all about? What? Because he knew that Rachel was the daughter of Lavan, because they informed him. When they had conversed, do you know him? Yes, we know him. Well, don't ask us so much about him. His daughter's coming. You can ask all the questions you want. That was more or less their response to him. It also mentions that the flock of his uncle Lavan, in English we don't have it, but in Hebrew, Tzon Lavan Ache Imo, his mother's brother. Now we know this. Why is there so much stress here? In other words, Torah is informing Yaakov what's coming. First of all, you should know that your intended wife is the daughter of Lavan. The father is the brother of your mother. But he's only her brother. He's nothing like her. So, but this is your family member. This is who you're going to marry. And Lavan is mentioned in this pasuk 3 times. So you should know. Beware. Understand. And coming from perspective of the stone, this Lavan has it in for you. That's just the type of person he is. He's going to be there similar to the stone that's covering the well. Like the one in charge of the stone, so to speak, in that your intention is the well, your wife. That's not going to come easy. He will trick you. You won't marry her right away. Then there's a stone on top of that well. She won't have children right away. Then this is all about the flock of Lavan, because later when Yaakov is seeking so hard to create for himself a livelihood, because in short amount of time he has himself a tribe, literally, or just about, he needs to feed his children. So flocks of Lavan, great, Lavan has flocks, I can be his shepherd. It's not going to be so easy. You're going to have to work, and he will pay you, and he'll cheat you, and he'll deceive you. There's a stone on top of everything that has to do with your wife, with your life, with your wife. And not only that, she'll have some children, and then at the time when she gives birth to her second child, she's going to die. And then she's buried, and on the road, and not with you, Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Big time tzoros, you know? All of this is being revealed to Yaakov in this encounter. So when we approach this little story, it's like this idyllic story in Torah, and there's flocks and the water, and not so simple. It's all symbolic of the message that Hashem wants to give Yaakov. And it's kind of a summary of all the challenges that later played themselves out. So what's his response to this? He hears it. Then what? Second pasuk? he kissed Rachel. We won't go into the halachic implications of that. She was a young girl at that time. He's her cousin, whatever. But he broke into tears. You would think that, oh, this has been pretty easy. It was a long journey, very difficult. According to the Midrash, Esav's son came and stripped him of all his possessions. He came as a poor man. He couldn't offer anything to Rachel. And that's not why he cried. He cried because he got the message. He understands that there's going to be a struggle. And then what happens there? What does he do when he first, not after this, but initially, when Rachel comes, he sees her and what? How does he respond to seeing Rachel? He went right to unroll the stone. What's that symbolic of in light of our learning here? What does that mean? She's not doing anything. He's taking off the stone. He just got the message that his life would be covered. His wife, the source of his energy, would not come easy to him. There's a heavy stone. How does he respond to that? He's going to take off the stone. Hashem, so I'm going to try to stand up to these challenges. I will work hard. I'll do. If this is my path in life, if this is what's destined for me, I'm not going to shirk my responsibility. I'll take off the stone. But if you look at the psukim, I didn't bring them here because this is what we studied last time, was that we saw in the story that the way it's described in great detail. So that when the shepherds are explaining to him, and there's a stone. So we all come and we take off the stone. And then everybody thinks, oh, fuck. And then after we finish, we put the stone back on it. Remember why? Because they don't trust each other. And then we'll come again, and then we'll take it off and we'll put it back. And that's how we run our business here. So the stone, in terms of being on the well and coming off the well, is mentioned a number of times. In the story, the stone always goes back on the well. Why? Because that's going to be Rachel's life. That's going to be his lot. He's going to have to carry this stone figuratively on him. Know that his life is not going to be easy, and the stone has to go back onto the well. Let's continue. So then in, oh, we have time. Source 5. Somebody read? Go ahead, please. Thank you. Continue. When her labor was at its hardest, the midwife said to her, "Have no fear, for he is not away from you." Continue. But as she breathed her last, for she was dying, she gave to her bed, but his mother-in-law lived with her. Thus, Rachel died. She was very humbled and proud of her bed. Over her grave, question. We're familiar with the details of this story. What strikes us as a bit out of the ordinary in Yaakov's response to Rachel's passing? This was his beloved wife. For her, he kept taking off the stone and putting on the stone, figuratively speaking. Life was not easy. This should have been the happiest time in their lives. Why? Finally, it's been reconciled. They're living as a happy family with soon, very soon, 12 children, all the tribes that need to be born. They're on the way back to where? Where are they traveling? To Eretz Yisrael. To do what? Yaakov wants to introduce his wife to his father. This is what you sent me for. Wife, children, wives, children. This should be the happiest moment of their lives. And then this. And then she dies in childbirth. What would you expect? Let's leave that hanging for a moment. And let's look into our next source. Who would like to read? Rhonda, would you like to? Go ahead. Didn't you raise your hand before? Yadina, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sarah's lifetime, the span of Sarah's
And then came the story of purchasing, start Parsha this week, purchasing Maharata Machpela, which was a big to-do. Avram puts forth much effort in that procedure. And then so this is describing Avram's response to Sarah's passing. And Sarah lived a long life. And they had troubles, but Baruch Hashem, she had seen nachas, and she knows that she had fulfilled her mission of establishing the next generation of the Abrahamic seed. How does Avram respond to her passing? What are the words? He mourns her. Mourn, bewail. We're hearing what? Agony, emotion, upsetness. What about Rachel?
Nothing.
Nothing. Now you might say, okay, to each their own. Every human being has their own ability to show emotion, to share emotion. But wait a minute. Let's take a couple of examples from Yaakov's life and see, is Yaakov capable of expressing his emotions? Let's look. Number 8. Go ahead, please. Remember when she said, "Ve'im ayin meta anochi." Give me children. We mentioned this in our last class. And what are the words in Hebrew? Vayichar af Yaakov. He was angry with her. So when Yaakov wants to show emotion, it doesn't come too difficult for him. And this is to his beloved wife. Moving on. The next. Yes, go ahead, Naka. This is when Yaakov is consulting with his wives, telling them that it's time to move on. It's time to move. We need to leave here. And what are the words that he's saying? I see that your father's manner towards me is not as it had been in the past. Just a moment. From day one, Laban was very kind and nice to him. So what's he saying? I'd like to share an idea that I once came across that just... I like that idea. What he's telling them, really, he's expressing his own personal avodas Hashem. Your father doesn't appear to me the same way as he appeared when I first came here. When I first came here, I was abhorred at his mannerisms.
Well, now he's used to it.
Now I got used to it. It's like, and I'm kind of, that doesn't affect a person very well. I'm afraid that I'm going to lower my standards. And Yaakov is a man of truth. I don't want this for my children. So, oh, it's okay. It's, you know, it's Zadie. What do you want? Da, 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 da. It's time to go. I feel in my own selfhood that I am getting accustomed and a little bit perhaps too forgiving of it or accepting of it. Time to leave. But here he's saying it does bother. It bothers me. Well, he was just beginning. In other words, this is not what I want for my family. These are not the standards I want for my children. Because I see a change in me. Initially and up till now, I could clearly feel myself negating all that Lavan stands for. But of late, I feel that it's not like in the past. So he's talking about himself, not about Lavan. I feel that I'm afraid my standards may be, you know, perhaps a dent in my standards because we've been here so long and this is life and these are the local ways of conducting business, etc. We gotta move. So Yaakov is sharing something very personal, you know, about his own inner spiritual life, his own inner standards, values with his wives. So can Yaakov express himself? Yes. Next. This is in when Yaakov encounters Lavan, and Lavan complains and actually accuses him. Why did you take my sheep and you stole my sheep and etc. So how does he respond? Go ahead, please.
Now Jacob came and took up his grievance to Laban. Jacob spoke up and said to Laban,
Wow, that's like a theatrical presentation. Yaakov is very expressive. He's upset with Laban, to put it mildly, and he gives him an earful, which is totally justified. Moving on. The next episode in Yaakov's life. Let's read. Anybody?
Jacob rent his cloth.
Thank you.
Put sackcloth on his loins to observe mourning for his son every day. All the sons of God sought to comfort him, but he refused to comfort and said, I will go down mourning to my son, Sheol, plus his father he wept.
So he knows how to mourn too. So he knows how to be expressive. When he's upset, he can be expressive. And the last example, if we're going down the line, Penny, go ahead.
Simeon and Levi are a pair. Their weapons are tools of lawlessness. Let not my person be included in their council, let not my name be counted in their council. For in anger they study things, they gain oxen. Cursed be their anger so fierce, and their wrath so relentless. I will divide them in Jacob, scatter them in Israel.
Whoa. This is to children. So it seems that Yaakov is the most verbally expressive of all the others. We don't hear this kind of, these kind of utterances to this extent, both whether in being pleased or whether in being in anger. Yaakov has a rich emotional world. And yet when it comes to his wife, we don't hear, it's not even we don't see him shed a tear. We don't hear him say anything. What do you think? How would you explain this? And our next source brings those same psukim that we read before. There may be a hint there. Sorry? So he's explaining why he buries her in Beit Lechem. But does this explain why he doesn't shed a tear?
No, but the whole thing was sort of thought out rather than
okay.
Logic brain, not emotions, right?
So what's wrong with Yaakov's emotion? He's very emotionally, and he's very expressive emotionally. We see it in many places in Torah. Why does he choose? You're saying logic. He chooses to respond in this way.
Because of the baby, he changes the baby's name.
What do you read in that?
Because she's negative, he's positive.
Good. All the mothers named the children. And she called him Ben-Oni. What does Ben-Oni mean? Not Oni as with an ayin, but Oni with an aleph means strength. So Ben Oni, you are the son of my strength, meaning you came into this world taking every ounce of strength. I have nothing left. Oni is also lack or loss. I lost my strength bringing you into this world. This is how Rachel expressed herself here. What does Yaakov do?
He renames him.
He's taking that same name. He's totally respectful of Rachel. Taking that same name, and he calls it with a slight variation. Instead of Ben Oni, Ben Yamin.
Sorry, Yamin is also strength.
Yamin Hashem Osachayo. Yamin Hashem Osachayo. In other words, what we're hearing here is that Yaakov wants to perpetuate the memory of his wife, and what she called him is important, and he's not changing her the name that he gave. He kind of calls it by a variation, so that the very strength she's speaking about will be embedded in her son in a positive way as opposed to in a negative way. Where did he get the energy to do this? And right then and there. The next step, the next action, kind of helps us come full circle. What does he do for her? Let's read that pasuk. over her grave, Yaakov set up a pillar. It is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. What is it called? Kever Rachel, in Hebrew, a matseva. And a matseva is what? A stone. Oh, remember the stone. We're coming full circle. He's accepting all that Hashem had told him. He knew that this was going to be his life. He had emunah and bitachon, and he said, this is what you're giving me. I will try to do my best. So that's why it's Binyamin and not Ben Oni. Here is the stone. I need to put a stone back on the well. The well is dried up for me now. So I'm putting the stone back on the well. But what happened to that stone? It became Kever Rachel. So as opposed to a stone which kind of clamps down and that's the end, what does it now serve as? A source, not just a memorial, a source of a place where people come and daven. And it's who comes to Kever Rachel? Everybody, and from all over, and identifies with Kever Rachel sometimes even more than with Hebron. Why? I am in need. I need to pray. I feel alone. I'll go to my mama who's alone on the road. Remember in our last class, we described Rachel as being Eim HaGalut, the mother of Galus. She met her husband on the way, she gave birth on the way, she died on the way, she's buried on the way. Al Eim HaDerech. She's up. But what is she on Eim HaDerech? She's the Eim. She's the mama. Remember we described how Eim is 41 and it's 41 days from Rosh Hashanah and so on? So now I want to full circle. We began this discussion with Rachel. Resh Ches Lamed is Rashi Tevot, the acronym for Rashi Chodashim Lamcha Natata. You have given your people Rosh Chodesh. And Rachel is connected to Rosh Chodesh. That's why her name is inscripted in that pasuk. But it goes deeper than that. Because what is Rosh Chodesh a symbol of? End and renewal. It's the end. And where is it? How is it so apparent that this is the end? Because we're celebrating Rosh Chodesh, but you can't see the moon. Or you barely see the moon. That's Am Yisrael. We're in Gullus. The reality is that it's dark. But we live with the image of Rachel, of a concept of Rosh Chodesh, of a stone put on, but there for us throughout the Gullus. And that's why the next holiday that's coming up is going to be Hanukkah, right? And if you do for homework, figure out the gematria of Rachel. So that's Reish 200 plus Ches plus Lamed. And you will see that it equals the exact gematria of Vayehi Or. Implying that we're in Gullus. It's dark. There's a stone over. But Rachel is there to imbue us, to infuse us with the energy at her death that she commanded life for the next generation. Bezkot Binyamin. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you.
Let me put this recording on also. I've learned a lot of tricks from the year on Zoom. One of them is if I want to record on my phone, I have to go off Wi-Fi and on airplane mode. Otherwise, my kids call and they interrupt the recording. That happened many times. So like, I feel like I learned so much. Okay. Are we ready? All right. So not continuity from last week. But if you weren't here last week, you're not missing out tonight. So you're good. Okay? We are okay, we'll get I'm gonna finish here.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Horowitz. We'll begin in a moment. We'll give you a little breather in between, so take a moment and we'll start momentarily.